Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we will spend most of our attention here previewing a Syracuse game, talk a little bit about surrounding the program and just some recent bits of information we've come across, and then have a real brief talk about some injuries, injury updates, and maybe one or two pieces of information from the recruiting trail. So look forward to the podcast. Interesting little game with Syracuse, obviously not what anybody anticipated from a record standpoint, but two programs with pretty compelling years. And we'll jump right into this. As always, want to thank Louisiana Hot Sauce. Couldn't be blessed to be paired with a better product, something you and I authentically enjoy, authentically use throughout our daily kind of meal prep and meals that we may have on the go. And just want to encourage everybody to keep them in mind. Great, simple product, great price point, and something that can be incorporated and able to improve just about any meal that you put on your table.
Yeah, man. Look, it always shows up, and that's something that, like, I feel Florida State fans can count on from their hot sauce, but not from their football team this year, unfortunately. And looking at Syracuse, I'm just going to start off our conversation tonight. If Florida State shows up in this game and wants to win it and has a cohesive game plan put together by the coaches and something that can give the players some confidence that they can win this game, then they really should win it going away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Syracuse is off a bye. So that's certainly an advantage for them. But the last time out, they played Miami, and the score was a lot closer than how that game was played. I mean, Ingram, do you know what the win expectancy was for Syracuse in that game? I went and looked this up on Bill Connolly's site, Football Study Hall. 1%.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a 1% win expectancy, you typically don't lose by 8. You typically lose by like 2-3 touchdowns.
Right.
And indeed, the projected scoring margin based on their stats in that game was 22. They really didn't play them that close, and they've also won games this year over Clemson, in which they only had a 48% win expectancy, and over Pitt, in which they only had a 22% win expectancy. That's pretty amazing. Against NC State, they you know, laid an egg, 9%. At LSU, 13%. Middle Tennessee State at home, 6%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only two times this year they've actually played a game where they had greater than a 50% win expectancy was Central Connecticut, which is a D2 school. Or Central Michigan, which was, you know, a okay team from the MAC. If Florida State shows up, they're going to win this game because they have a lot better players than Syracuse does at a lot of these spots. But that's if they play as a team. And unfortunately, that's not necessarily guaranteed with this group right now.
Yeah, I really, Bud, I feel like this game, and not to just jump right into an overall macro prediction, but I really feel like this game is either going to be something that Florida State has a pretty good control over and maybe wins by 12 points or 14 points, or that they just don't have it, don't have the energy, don't have the effort, and a little bit of pace on offense makes that even all the more noticeable, and this may get away from them pretty quickly. So really interesting. I agree with you. If the team comes with focus, particularly if the defense, the front six, come with focus and are willing to play assignment ball, I don't see how Florida State doesn't win the game. So two large contrasts in how I see this game potentially playing out.
Look, because it's Syracuse, because it's Coach Dino Babers, so I think it's a really good coach, by the way. And there's not a lot of talent to work with at Syracuse. Let's focus on their offense first. It is a wide-open offense, right? Coach Dino Babers was a Baylor guy. He got out of there before a lot of that Briles stuff started hitting the fan. They are going to run that Art Briles system, which is a extremely aggressive up-tempo system. They are number 13 in the nation in pace. They want to throw the ball down the field. They want to create shots. They want to create free runners. And they want to basically, like, they want to have a couple shots in the game where the defense is just not lined up right. And that's a cool way to play if the defense can't get lined up right. And there is a defense at Tallahassee that occasionally does not line up.
Maybe doesn't always get lined up right, particularly when pace might get introduced. Yeah.
Huh. I'm saying.
Yeah, so Babers, I'm a big fan of Babers as well, somebody that we've talked about for a couple years and had some admiration as to what he's done. Quarterback Eric Dungy, somebody that the more than the non-passive college football fan will probably be familiar with. Just a really good, solid quarterback who's been in the program for a little bit, knows what's expected of him, and has a strong bond, strong partner in crime, a guy at wide receiver that he's developed a good rapport with, and Steve Ishmael, somebody that, you know, I had a Syracuse guy comment to me about this, and he basically the way that he described it was almost like the way that we've talked about Francois and Auden Tate, maybe the way that we would have talked about Blackman and Tamorian Taylor, just a guy, Tamorian Terry. They practiced together, had a lot of rapport, and that kind of comes out through the years in their ability to play meaningful games in this year.
Yeah, man. I mean, they play well together. He's done a great job getting the ball to Ishmael this year. Not so much to their other targets, actually. I think that's maybe a bit of a weakness of Syracuse. If you look at this, Dungy this year only 5.8 yards adjusted per attempt. Now, success rate throwing the ball to Steve Ishmael has been really good. He's actually had 106 targets. Evan Phillips, decent. But Ishmael has 8 yards a target. Everybody else, it looks like, as far as the receiver core, is under 7. So there's a decent drop-off there. And he's going to throw the ball to Ishmael about one out of every 3 passes. So you know the ball is coming to that guy quite a bit. He's got decent size. I mean, 6'2", 210. Florida State's really going to have to be on their game for him. And I like Dungy quite a bit, man, especially when you consider his ability to run the football as well. In fact, if you flash back to the preseason, we caught a lot of flack for saying that Dungy actually was probably better than Francois was. You know, when everybody's like, well, he's probably the best quarterback in the conference not named Jackson. We thought, well, you know, I don't know, man, if Dungy can stay healthy, and he does get concussed a lot, seemingly, somewhat because he tries to hurdle players a lot, he's pretty good. You know, he already has 627 yards rushing on the year, too.
Did. I saw that earlier today. Impressive. Really impressive kid who's just got good mobility, real good when he rolls out of the pocket.
Hard to sack. I mean, 6'4", 222.
Yeah, hard to sack.
That's a big kid.
Good legs underneath him. And not necessarily the best offensive line in front of him, so that's kind of a good thing that he has that in his bag of tricks.
Yeah, their offensive line is not that good. I mean, if you look at this, decent size, but not great. I mean, you got for the most their left side is a little smaller, 296, 292. You have 2 redshirt freshmen on the interior at left guard and at center. You know, your left tackle is a junior, right tackle is a redshirt senior, and the Evan Adams kid's not bad. He's kind of your road grader at right guard, but it's not a great offensive line. And to be honest, they didn't necessarily block Clemson all that well in that game, and they had a bunch of really freaky stuff happen against Clemson, but they managed to win the game. You know, one other thing was they had a huge, they ran 90 plays against Clemson, which kind of, I think, tired out Clemson. Clemson ran only 61. That was big for sure. And their ability to create explosive passing plays against Clemson really helped them a lot. And Clemson had none on that night. I think this is a decent offense. I mean, it's one of the better ones Florida State's going to have played, I think. Especially if you're not ready for it. And that's kind of what scares me here, because I think, you know, if Florida State was playing at their talent level, you wouldn't be worried about this game at all.
Well, Bud, they're ready for it. They've been running two offenses in practice, getting ready for the pace. So you just multiply Florida State's offense by two, and you get some sort of representation as to what the 13th fastest offense in the country looks like.
Somebody asked me if I was going to bet Florida State this week, and I said no, because do my numbers say to bet them? Yeah. But they also said so last week, and Florida State had probably the worst performance out of any team relative to expectations in the nation. So that was disappointing that they would come out and do that. And I don't know, how can you trust this team if you're in a pick'em or if you're in any kind of, you know, spread pool or even in a betting circumstance? I don't think you really can. Also, Ingram, how much confidence do you have this staff's going to prep this team well for pace? Because, to be honest, I don't think you prep real well for stuff that you don't do well. Right, and Florida State doesn't do pace well.
Well, I just told you they're running the two offenses, bud. They got the pace thing figured out.
Maybe they could do that in an actual game. Run two offenses out there.
I believe that's the whole Kentucky Derby, the origination of it. But that's a reference from the early '90s, so I'm probably dating myself there. Only other piece of the offense that we should mention real quickly for Syracuse is running back Dante Strickland. Not somebody that's necessarily going to leave you grasping for air as he shakes you out your shoes or anything like that, but a pretty good back with a decent amount of size and a guy that Florida State might see a little bit on Saturday.
Yeah, only 3.7 yards per carry. Syracuse does not run the ball a whole lot with its backs, but when it does need to hand it off, he's oftentimes the guy to get the handoff. Looking at Syracuse, man, the one thing I will say is that they're not really great at converting on third and long. Now, I got a defense for them that might cure some of that. because the whole third and Kelly mantra.
Just get into anywhere between third and 17 and third and 22, and it seems to be damn near automatic if you can work within that five-yard window on this defense.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if it's a meaningful third down. That's really when it gets cooking. So
that's basically it there. Just looking at some other stats from them, I don't think they're that good. But the thing is, like you really have to temper your expectations here because I don't know if Florida State's even going to show up. You know, like, this Syracuse team is not that good.
I mean, we lost 35-3 last week. So, yeah, I think fears about a team showing up are very, very legitimate and don't even necessarily have to be explained all that much. I think it's completely understood. I made a comment a couple weeks ago about a Georgia Tech preview that we were talking about. And I said that maybe playing that offense is the worst thing, that if you've got a team that's kind of questioning its motivation or questioning its real want to play football. And if it's not that type of offense, then it's certainly almost this type of offense. And Syracuse is not, like I said a second ago, they're 13th in pace in the country. So they're not necessarily, you know, late 2000s Chad Morris Clemson type pace, but they still want to get on the ball and they want to get as many snaps in as possible, north of 90, like you said, against Clemson. If the defense doesn't want to play and doesn't want to be mentally tuned into what's going on, I would say that this is the perfect type of offense to exploit that, and it could be very ugly very quickly. So it's real hard to say how exactly successful Florida State's defense will be, because there are no individuals in the world that I'm aware of that have any kind of idea as to what this team's going to bring from a mental standpoint, from a game-to-game standpoint.
It's not like what they do in practice necessarily carries over good or bad, right? Like, they've had some games where they've had good practice weeks and then relatively decent practice weeks, and then they've played like crap, and they've had some games where they've not had great practice weeks, and then they ended up playing a close game where you have a coach walk out of practice because he's like, I can't coach these guys anymore. That's interesting. By the way, 247 report that Randy Sanders, quarterback coach, not expected back, so credit to, I think, Josh Newberg on that one.
Yeah, I will give credit to Josh as that as well. I will also say, if you've listened to the past couple podcasts, I've made reference to the fact that the coaching news would come out fairly quickly on the recruiting trail. That was one of the moves in particular that I was referencing. That, again, I give Josh for that credit for that. He broke it, but that is one of the moves that I was referencing that you would hear sooner than later because of some of the recruiting implications tied to that.
You remember that scene in Office Space? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not sure which scene you're referencing, but I can tell you I do remember it because that's one of my personal favorites, and I have a pretty good recollection of just about every scene from that movie.
So he says, what would you say you do here?
Yes, a couple consultants.
When Sanders was hired, I think everybody was very excited because he seemed to be able to get Jimbo to calm down a little bit, right? Jimbo had a reputation for being like overly excitable and kind of just like a haphazard mess on the sidelines at times. Mm-hmm. It looked like he was just not super organized, right? Looked like he was losing his mind on the sideline. When Sanders came in, it did seem like he was able to calm down Fisher a little bit and help him gather and kind of take some responsibilities off him. Sanders never had a reputation as a good recruiter, and that continues to this day. And I don't really want to say he's good or bad quarterback coach. I think he's probably fine. However, Jimbo does appear to be acting on the sidelines like he did before Sanders came. So if that effectiveness of kind of corralling Fisher is no longer there, then I think making a change makes a lot of sense. In addition, I'm going to write about this too this week, I think. If the product you're selling is of declining quality, you need to get better salespeople, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Florida State's product is really declining. And if you're a high school kid in the class of 2017, think about what Florida State has been throughout your high school career. That's years 14, 15, 16, and 17, not 2013. So undefeated when you're a freshman, then they get stomped by Oregon. Next year was a rebuilding year, not very good. Last year was a disappointment, and from disappointment to disaster. So yes, the title wasn't that long ago, but if you're a high school kid, your most formative years are your most recent ones, and Florida State has not been really all that special during your 4 years of high school. And I'm not saying you don't remember the title, because you certainly do.
the kids that we recruit in the class of 2019, the title, they will have watched the title as seventh graders. So right. That's a perspective to have as to what exactly people have viewed when making their decisions as to what school to go to.
So this is something that I was going to, I think the point I want to make is, even if Florida State was having a good year, I still think you were going to need to fire some of these dudes or have them retire or whatever and get some better recruiters in there, because Miami's going to give you a little more challenge. I presume Florida will, assuming they make a good hire, whether it's Mullen, Scott Frost, or Willie Taggart, or whomever. And Georgia's really rolling right now. So that's all legitimate competition right around your backyard that you're going to need to stiffen up against. And so I think that the bad season only has more impetus on making changes, but it's not like they weren't going to need to make some changes anyway for recruiting purposes. Because the guys they have right now, I'm not going to say they suck as recruiters, but they're not like, there's not a whole lot of guys in the staff who you think of as like elite recruiters. For most of their tenure at Florida State, they've been selling an excellent product, though. Is it that hard to sell Mercedes, you know, to somebody who's got money? No. But you may need to be a little more creative if you're selling something less.
I think that's very fair. All right, bud, something we've mentioned a couple times recently, but that the Syracuse game is Parents Weekend. So a lot of interesting and fun things go with that. People watching in particular. But look, there's no better place in general to go see any type of sporting event, but to have maybe a tailgate, a opportunity to sit before game and enjoy Madison Social or head there afterwards. But Parents Week in particular is a great time and something for everybody over there, an atmosphere that's welcoming for all. And if you're either going to visit your child or maybe you're a student and you're going to have your parents in town and maybe don't feel like you want to take them to particular other places, just keep Madison Social in mind. It's a great location, great atmosphere, and something that pretty much everybody up and down the spectrum can enjoy. And it is designed to be welcoming, and it certainly is that.
Right. It's in the place called College Town, but that's the name kind of doesn't give its actual, you know, existence the right reputation. It's not like some college bar where your feet stick on the floor and, you know, that type of thing. But it's not too stuffy as well. Like the parents and the kids really enjoy it. Ingram, noon games suck, as they say, and being that this is a 12:20 game, they'll be giving away their free sunscreen again starting at 8 a.m., with the purchase of a Nolcast Bloody Mary or a beer or I believe a mimosa as well. It's pretty cool. You get it on a keychain. It has the cool little Noon Game Suck logo on the side there. Also, did you check out their pancake stack for this week at Madison Social?
I have not seen that. No, I haven't.
The bourbon apple bacon.
Ooh.
Yes, sir. And cinnamon spiced whipped cream. That's a winner. And then also Friday night, if you happen to be in town for Parents Weekend, go check out the Block Party. Great artists playing all the time. The weather this weekend is just going to be absolutely awesome. Friday, high of 83. Saturday, high of 82. When the high is 82, man, you get that get that kind of high 70s weather for most of the day. Sunshine, you know, not really going to need a jacket until maybe at nighttime. That is perfect. That is the optimal time to enjoy Madso, Township, and Centrale, our three great sponsors of the For the Table Restaurant Group, as well as Sodo, their new awesome bakery in Midtown.
Sanders never deemed an ace recruiter, but it's strange, bud, and I don't want to take us down a rabbit hole, but there was a period of time where Sanders was, I don't want to call him the lead recruiter, at least from what I heard from Justin Fields' side of the equation, but was particularly involved and had done a really good job of putting them in a place to be competitive, and it's not as though Sanders was the only person involved in that, so I'm not trying to allude to that. But then all of a sudden, it just, like, everything kind of fell off there. So I'm surprised at how that's all played out. I'm not shocked at all that Randy and probably a couple other people are going to choose to potentially retire, and then other people may move for other positions or be told that their spot won't be available. But the recruiting angle, to Randy Sanders has just had a lot of variance in it over the past 6 months as far as his involvement and what he's been tasked to do.
I talked to a guy today who I trust. I mean, and we were just kind of spitballing, and I was like, how many changes do you really think they could have on staff? And he said, but I think they might wipe all nine. It's like, what? Really? He's like, yeah, I think there's some chance that he just goes totally scorched earth. You know, I said, well, what about, you know, for instance, like Odell, right? Who is just a strong recruiter,
institution, really good coach around here for the most part.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Beloved by big money boosters too. I'll tell you that.
He said that's the one. He said that's the guy that for me would be the hardest to envision not being here. He said, but you know, at the same time, like if you want to just start completely clean, maybe you don't want guys around who say, well, last year he was like, you know, he acted like X, or he said this last year, or whatever, right? I mean, it's almost like if you're teaching a class, you know, do you really want somebody who's repeating that class and who can tell everybody like some of the stuff that's going to happen later? You almost want your lesson plan to be brand new to them. But I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah, I just wanted to share that because that to me was something that was surprising because I really hadn't contemplated the idea that all nine could be gone. And I don't think it's going to happen. But just that he would say that, as somebody both you and I know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of took me back a little bit.
Mm. Interesting. Well, a lot of time to talk about that. I one would be pretty surprised if Odell's not there, but if a fresh start is what's entirely wanted, then maybe you do have to have a clean slate. And I don't know. Maybe there'd be a place for Odell doing something else within the program or within the athletic department. But
by the way, Ingram, apparently I'm so famous now that people want to create fake Twitter accounts of me.
I saw that, man. You don't need to be tweeting rumors about people retiring, bud. I'm not really up to me to decide what you put on Twitter, but just one person to another passing out advice.
I appreciate it, man. All right, yeah. So let's go through the steps to identify Bud Elliott on Twitter, right? number one, actual verified check mark, not a just blue.
Just a blue circle. Thing slapped on there, yeah.
Right. Number two, instead of having 63 followers, 52,000. That is a somewhat of a difference. You could look at that if you wanted to. It's not impossible to copy my bio as the guy did. Number three, did you know that actually if you're a verified Twitter account, Twitter can investigate this kind of stuff for you and find the person's IP, and then you can sue them?
I did not know that.
Yeah. That seems like interference with business relations, doesn't it? So, potentially interesting news there. Number four, I don't break news via Twitter because Twitter does not, they don't sign my checks. So this is a little inside baseball, but I think some people enjoy this from time to time. Now, check this out. Today, ESPN issued some guidance that we've been going on forever, right? I always, if I'm going to break some news, I put it on the website first because I want to win the race to Google, and then I put it on my Twitter account with the link so you can go read it on Tomahawk Nation. This from ESPN today. Finally, seeming to get the memo, which I don't know why it would take them this long if we figured this out years ago. This is what they sent to their employees. Do not break news on social platforms. We want to serve fans in the social sphere. But the first priority is to ESPN news and information efforts. Public news, example, announced in news conferences, can be distributed without vetting. However, source or proprietary news must be vetted by the Universal News Desk. Once reported on an ESPN platform, that news can and should be distributed on social platforms, which basically means put it on our website first.
Right.
That's what we do. So if somebody's like tweeting a major news and it says Bud Elliott, but there's no link to Tomahawk Nation, it's not me. Because my advertisers don't like when I just put stuff out there on Twitter that doesn't lead people to my website so they can view their advertising. That just doesn't make a lot of sense. Anyway, that's your kind of PSA of the day.
I would also say that your name has two T's in it, but we've worked together for 8 years and I still get that wrong sometimes. So, you know, no, it's not necessarily something I'd expect everybody to pick up on.
All right, let's go to Syracuse's defense.
Let's do. So, an interesting unit, Bud. Pretty thick in the middle. Big defensive tackles. Not necessarily a great size on the ends, and backers are good players, but not maybe a tad undersized as well, just initial observations from the front seven.
Yeah, they're 315 and 319 in the middle, but their ends are like 240 and 245, so that's pretty different there, and their backup ends are 245 and 232, so it's not like they have a bunch of big guys on the edges. They are pretty aggressive in terms of run blitzing. Their backers are 216, 236, and 209. So, again, not that big there. To me, that suggests a game where Florida State might be able to run to the edges here some and bend them and see how well Syracuse can hold up on the edges. I don't mean necessarily like at the corner spots, but those DNs are kind of light. Florida State has some pretty good length at their tackle spots. That's going to be interesting to me to see how Syracuse wants to defend that. Certainly, you got to get those guys blocked up on the inside. That won't be easy. The Chris Slayton guy is pretty good against the run. Their best pass rusher is a guy named Alton Robinson. He's one of their defensive ends. I would say they play pretty good team defense. By the advanced metrics, their defense, Ingram, is actually rated a little bit higher than their offense is, if you adjust for opponent played. But they don't necessarily have a ton of standout guys, and they do try to create a lot of turnovers, which can lead to some gambles, certainly. And if you make them pay with big plays, which Florida State doesn't really do this year, but in theory, if they could, that could be good, because Syracuse is certainly going to gamble a lot and try to get some big, some turnovers there and see if they can create some mistakes. But it's kind of an unremarkable defense. Like, they play to get better as a unit than they do individually.
Yeah, that's fair. I know a little bit about Syracuse and went back and watched parts of two of their game before tonight, but there's not a ton that really stands out to me about their defense. I mean, like you said, you may see a lot of the very familiar stretch runs, and that seems to be something that Akers is getting slightly more comfortable running, and Rasul may be possible for Rasul to have a pretty big day. I guess it's worth mentioning, and we're going to talk about injuries at one point, but Jacques Patrick has been in the news, have not maybe sustained quite the injury that was originally thought of. Not somebody that is going to be back for this game per se, but potentially returns for the Clemson game. I don't know how I feel about that. I quite honestly, unless that kid is 100%, and I mean 100%, I really have no desire to see him carry the ball at all this year. And that's not a reflection on him. It's really a reflection of how much I think of him, and of all years to rush back into action this year would seem to be perhaps the most inappropriate one of any that we've gone through over the past two or three decades.
Here's something to think about, Ingram. Something just kind of that pops out to me about their defense, by the way. Teams only run the ball on them on standard down, so first and 10, second and 7 or less, 54% of the time. That's actually 114th in the nation. So a lot of teams are electing to pass on early downs on Syracuse, and I think the reason is because Syracuse really does load up against the run. They want to play some tight quarters coverage and kind of dare you to throw. It'll be interesting to see, because I know Jimbo likes to give some early easy reads for James Blackman. I know Jimbo typically likes playing against quarters. There's a lot they like to throw the post on those. They go post alert to that. We'll see how much they do with that against Syracuse. There's also potential, if you can get it blocked up, to hit some play-action shots. Maybe if Keith Gavin plays in this game, or Auden Tate, who's questionable, maybe if he's able to take some shots over the middle, that could be big. That could be a way you could actually create some explosive plays against this defense. But certainly, they want to take away your ability to run the ball on early downs via alignment. I would say that I think it's important to run the ball on second and, like, if they get second and eight, I would run the ball against Syracuse, especially because if they're in pass rush mode, you can get those ends upfield and you can get slip underneath them with Cam Akers. Either get a first down off that or set yourself up for a more manageable third down. Stay out of those long down and distances, which have just been killer for Blackman this year. I think that's how I would try to play that if I'm Florida State.
Fair enough. Any thoughts on the news regarding Jacques Patrick and him potentially returning for the Clemson game?
I totally agree with you. I mean, I thought you just said it so well there, to be honest. I just read that on what Orlando Sentinel or whatever. I was pretty shocked because Florida State thought he was done. Like, and they said it, like, didn't Jimbo say he was done for the year? It wasn't like a source thing. Jimbo was like, yeah, he's done.
Yeah, I thought he, well, I don't have the exact remarks that he said to Jeff Cameron.
No, because I remember Jeff Cameron asked him on the interview. Yeah, and Jeff goes, so he's done for the year, and Jimbo's like,
he said, yeah, pretty much, or something. I mean, he didn't say for sure, but
he certainly didn't say 2 weeks.
No, he didn't. The only hint of that was, didn't Patrick put something up on social media a couple days later saying, yeah, it might not be as bad as I first thought, or I might be back sooner. I don't remember exactly what he said. I don't pay a ton of attention to what those kids say on social unless it's something like that. It's injury related, but that just stands out. Anyway, Patrick, great season. I love what the kid's done. He's been incredibly unselfish and very much a program guy. And if he's coming back, I hope he's fully fit, and I hope he's able to continue to be the impactful player that he's otherwise been this year.
Do we need to do predictions here? Or God, I have no idea what to predict.
Yeah, man, this is tough. None. This is really tough. I mean, we had our finger on this team pretty closely during the period of time where you had a decent idea as to what they would come out and look like, but
not necessarily win or loss, but like rough score and like total points. And yeah, like last week, I mean, I thought if they showed up, they'd win. Dude, I have no idea what the hell to predict here.
Yeah, I really don't either. I'm gonna go. 26-21 Florida State.
God, it is so hard to pick this team.
It is impossible, but I keep doing it. And I'm one of these damn times, besides a trip to Tobacco Road or Wake Forest, I'll be correct. And they'll win one of these games, bud. It'll be great.
Well, if they win this game, then I expect them to announce that they're going to schedule the Syracuse game.
Nice segue there. So
if they do not win, then I think they will not play.
Then it's off the table, and I think you may hear that immediately. So
we have articles ready to go.
Yeah.
I will say that.
And we've got a decent beat on this, and I do think at this point that whole game is kind of dependent on the outcome on Saturday. So we will see. Nothing going to make this season anything different than what it is, but it sure would be nice to just not lose out entirely. I've never thought nearly as much about a bowl streak or not, although I did during the worst of the Bowden years, at least in the back of my mind, appreciate that we never had like a 3-9 season or something like that, like a lot of large marquee programs have found themselves in. And it would be great to see this team not completely wave the white flag and to get a win and to, as crappy as a bowl game as they may be participating in, it would be nice to see Florida State in a place to not absolutely be looking at a 3-8 or a 4-8 or something like that of a type of season. So a big hopes, large dreams at this point in the season.
You went 26-21?
I did, yes.
I'm going to go 27-20. Knowles. Okay. And the reason why I think that is this. I think Cam Akers is going to break off one big run. I think they're going to hit one big post pass. And I don't know that Syracuse is all that great in the red zone. So I think Syracuse is going to move the ball against Florida State. But I don't know they're necessarily going to score in the red zone all that much, which could lead potentially to some more field goals. Even though, if you want to see an example here, Dino does do the fourth down math really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like they, I'm trying to think where they rank in the country in this, but they really do a nice job of that. Syracuse has gone for fourth downs 25 times. They actually lead the nation.
Hmm. Yeah, contrast.
Florida State has gone for it 6 times.
Six times. I wonder how many of those 6 have been kind of situationally forced.
Like desperation goes?
Yeah, like
I think 4 of the 6.
Oh.
That's
okay.
Depressing.
That's even better. Even better.
From one depressing thought to another, we can talk about Owen Popoe.
Yeah, we won't spend a ton of time on this. And look, it's not like we got to sit here and bang on everybody about, oh, recruiting's going to take a hit. Or, I mean, I think at this point that's pretty self-explanatory. But I do want to just spend 2 minutes on Owen Popoe. Popoe is a 2019 kid out of the Atlanta area here, out of Grayson, I believe, regarded by a couple services as the number one player in the country. I'm not sure that that's necessarily what he'll be at the end of the cycle, but he's a top 10, top 15 kid, in my opinion, undoubtedly. Big-time linebacker, maybe a tad undersized right now, but all the potential in the world. And a guy that Florida State, at two different times in the past 6 months, was within a razor's edge of getting a commitment from. Very, very close. And Clemson certainly made their statement and threw their hat in the ring. But for a period of time, Florida State even kind of shook that off and put themselves back in a place to lead and, again, to come very, very close to securing a commitment from that kid. He announced earlier in the week that he's down to a top 3. Florida State's not part of it. So a very disappointing turn of events, not entirely unexpected. Ever since the NC State game, I talked about the fact that I thought recruiting would be impacted, 2019 in particular. And this is one of the kids that I was referencing. But all those Grayson kids that Florida State's been involved with, will be curious to see how that all plays out. So just something to note and something to remind yourself that Florida State, like you said, does need a couple people on that staff that have a little more of a salesman mentality and are able to aggressively attack the recruiting trail, because that's what very much is going to be needed.
Man, this is going to be tough for them. You got to get some stud recruiters in here, man. Like, I'm not worried about like the talent drop off necessarily for next year, but you can't be losing traction with this many kids. This is when I tweeted out fact check on Jimbo Fisher when he said that this season was not impacting recruiting at all, mm-hmm. and I said people got mad, and I was like, look, it's not our job to carry the program's water or lie to people. They are slipping with a lot of important kids, especially in 2019.
This is a kid that damn near made a recruiting video for a public commitment at one point in the summer. And you don't make his top 3. Justin Fields was a kid you spent a decent amount of time, particularly recently, with a lot of resources. and you never got an official visit. So if you don't think recruiting's being impacted, this may not be the perfect podcast for everybody, but we try to be as honest and as authentic as possible. And this may not be the conversation that you'd like to listen to.
Yeah, we'll be doing more recruiting soon, but I'm not really sure that all that news is going to be good, right? You do have kids taking official visits elsewhere, which I think is concerning. You have the early signing day, which you're going to have to figure out. You know, can you get some hires made before early signing day, or at least tell kids who's coming, right? Or if, say, you know, like if you have kids who are committed to other schools you want to flip, say, hey, at least hold off and don't sign early, you know? Because this is a problem for them, man. If they had had a decent year while Florida had to fire their coach, they could really put the screws to Florida, you know, by just inking a lot of really top kids in the state before Florida could really get their head coach in and him have actual time to get traction. But hadn't worked out that way for him.
Well, I mean, they positioned themselves not only in Florida, but they positioned themselves to potentially have a all-time 2019 class. And that at this point, it's just not going to happen. And to an extent, it's water under the bridge. No use in us just sitting here banging our heads saying the same thing over and over again. But you put yourself in a remarkably good place, and you had it taken away from you very, very quickly.
Right.
All right, bud. A little bit of this, that, and the other during this podcast. Hopefully gave people a decent idea as to what to look forward to during the Syracuse game. And we'll, like you said, we'll continue to talk about recruiting. Not all of it's going to be fun, but Florida State will do okay. And we'll be able to get an idea as to what's to come. And it'll be pretty exciting to see what this staff turnover looks like and how that impacts the 2018 class and how that eventually bleeds into 2019. So, you know, not all doom and gloom here, but at the same time, not everything's showing up roses either. So completely honest, being able to do this podcast is incredible. Very fortunate to be able to do it. And a ton of listenership in general recently. Just want to thank you for that. Thank you for 5-star reviews. Thank you for the word of mouth references that are given. And if it's something that you feel comfortable either sharing on Facebook or liking on Twitter, retweeting, whatever it is that you can do to support the Nolcast, know that Bud and I and Judson all very much appreciate it. It's noticed, it's recognized, and just something we're fortunate to do and look forward to being able to do this regardless of what the record might be of the team.
You know, we hit our 800th 5-star review on iTunes.
Wow, I did not know that. That's awesome.
That's really that's awesome. More than... Well, I'm not going to get into that. Anyway, that's exponentially more than anything else out there by far. So look, I'll read the most recent review here by MCDs4 or 84. Best FSU analysis out there. 5 stars. Bud and Ingram kill it every week. Also, I'm currently in California, but will visit the sponsors when I come to town solely because of their support for this podcast. Though based on Bud and Ingram's reviews, I will actually be pleased by the food as well. Indeed, you will. That's great spots at Madso and Township and Centrale. So almost all 5-star reviews recently, I feel like people are enjoying it. If you have any suggestions for the show, within reason, we always try to accommodate. And you know, if there's any place you want us to get on as far as a podcast platform, we're certainly open to it. I know we are on, Stitcher, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, iTunes. We're on Overcast, right? I'm pretty sure you can get us on there. I think we're on Podcast Republic. We're on almost any app that you have. Especially, we always tell people, hey, Google Play Music for Android and either Overcast or iTunes for your Apple device. But the one we can't get on so far is Spotify, and that's completely out of our control. We've submitted it, and I don't know anybody at Spotify. So if you happen to work at Spotify or have a really high-up connection to Spotify, then that would be a great thing to email to thenolcast@gmail.com. Because I'd like to be on there, and that's probably the only one, Ingram, I think, right, unless I'm missing one, that people actually still request of us to get on that we don't know how to get on.
Yeah, to our knowledge, I think that's the only platform that we do not have a presence on currently. Been real fortunate, and thank you to everybody that's given us any kind of feedback, positive or otherwise. It's appreciated, and we try to take it seriously and listen to that of what you have to say. So, Bud, look forward to your instant reaction. Hopefully it's one where we're able to look back and discuss a third Florida State victory for the 2017 season.
God.
And we will go from there as always.
This concludes this episode of the Nolcast. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, write us at thenolcast@gmail.com, or tweet us at Nolcast. Do I want to pick the Syracuse game? No. Do I feel slightly obligated to pick the Syracuse game? Yes. So I'm going to go 31-21 Florida State. Don't hate me if this isn't true. It probably won't be. To echo what Bud and Ingram were saying, incredible response recently from y'all. I mean, the season is tough. But I'm going to tell you what, y'all's listenership is not tough. Y'all have been very, very cool about all that. So thank y'all so much for that. We've been having great numbers recently. It's all because y'all are committed to your Noles and you're committed to this podcast. So thank you. Today's date is November 3rd, 2017 for Ingram, Smith, and Bud Elliott. This is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.